reach down and hold the boy up, only to see the tear-stained face of Amal. "Why are you back here?" Radu asked, shocked and despairing. Amal shook his head, unable to answer. Radu dragged him along. That, with his turban, bloody clothes, and sword, were enough to make him blend in with all the other soldiers dragging people and things through the streets. In the square outside the Hagia Sophia, soldiers not interested in immediately partaking of spoils secured their prizes. Beautiful children, girls and boys, were highly prized as slaves, as were young women. Anyone who looked wealthy was also carefully bound for future ransom. All around them were the bodies of those deemed too old or too sick to be of any worth. Radu dragged Amal through the center of the fall of Byzantium, through the center of prophecy. Everything was profaned and ruined. There was nothing holy in this victory. God had truly left the city. God was not here, but Radu was. And he still had a mission. His suspicion that Mehmed would send men ahead to protect the Hagia Sophia had proved correct. Several Yanicheris stood in front of the church's barred door, but a growing mob of irregulars and other soldiers shouted and screamed for their right to 3 days' pillaging of everything. The guards in the bar would not last long. If Radu was not in the first wave of men inside, he did not want to think what would happen to two small, beautiful boys. There was the side door he had broken in through, but there were too many soldiers around to do anything unseen. He shoved directly through the mob to the Yanicheri guards. One lowered his sword at him, but Radu brushed it impatiently aside. "Do you know what is in this building?" he asked. The Yanicheri hesitated. "We are to leave it unspoiled. Mehmed does not want anything burned. All the wealthiest people in the city are hiding behind those doors. All the gold, the silver, the riches we were promised are behind those doors. We are not here to burn." He raised his voice to a shout. "We are here to grow rich on the fat of these unholy infidels." The mob behind him roared, pushing forward. The Yanicheris, smart enough to know when they were going to lose, ran. Radu himself hacked through the bar, then pushed the doors open. The looters were greeted with screams and shrieks of despair. The mob fanned out, running to be the first to grab someone or something worthwhile. Radu scanned the faces, looking for the two he had come for. Amal stayed on his heels. In the corner near the stairs leading up to the gallery, Radu saw the two boys. They stood in front of their nurse with straight backs. Radu ran, shoving several others out of the way to get there first. "Please," the nurse pushed the two boys forward. "Spare me. These are the heirs, Constantine's heirs. I give them to you." The boys lifted their chins bravely. A man nudged Radu. "They're yours?" he asked, breathing heavily over Radu's shoulder. "The boys are. You can do whatever you want with that woman." He reached out a hand to either boy, crouching down so he was eye level with them. Recognition dawned on their faces. Manuel burst into tears. John threw himself forward, looping his arms tightly around Radu's neck. "Come on," Radu whispered. "We do not have much time. I know you are both very, very brave, but pretend you are scared and do not wish to go with me." John released him and took Manuel's hand. Amal tentatively reached out and took John's other hand. Radu walked behind them, pushing them toward the stairs. "Why are we going up?" John whispered as they climbed past the gallery. "There is no way out of the city now," Radu said. "I am going to hide you." Fortunately, no one had made it past the main floor. With so many people in the Hagia Sophia, the soldiers were busy grabbing as many of them as they could. Radu ushered the boys down the hall, then up the familiar ladders until they passed through a trap door and onto the roof. Once they were on the roof, Radu jammed his sword into the trapdoor's hinges. It would not hold against any serious attempt to break through, but he doubted that men looking for the spoils of war would think to check the roof of a cathedral. He led the boys away from the edge, where they could be seen from the street, and where they could see what was happening. John and Manuel, at least, had been spared those memories so far. Radu would keep it that way. They found a sheltered area and sat together, one heir huddled against each of Radu's sides, with Amal curled by his legs.
"Thank you for saving us,"
John said, trembling. Raju looked up to heaven and closed his eyes, because he could not accept those thanks. He had not saved them. He had no way to get them out, no way to leave the city unnoticed. All he had done was delay the inevitable. But unlike him, they were innocent, and so he would keep them safe for as long as he was breathing. And he prayed that somewhere out there, Cyprian would do the same for Nazira. 48. Late May. In the weeks after her ascension, Larda spent as much time as possible outside. They were waiting for the end of May when all the Dinesh boyars had been invited to a feast, anticipating it was a burden. Toma had taken over most of the planning, for which she was both grateful and annoyed. She knew she needed the boyars' permanent support if she was to keep her throne, but she did not know how to get it. If only she had Radu. Radu. She had received word that the siege against Constantinople was in progress. Where was he? Was he safe? Of all the things she held against Mehmed, jeopardizing Radu's safety was the greatest. If Radu was hurt, she would never forgive Mehmed. Radu was not an acceptable sacrifice, not for any city. Though Larda herself had sacrificed her relationship with him to come here, Valahia was different, though. Valahia was hers. It was bigger and more important than any city. Besides, she had not put Radu directly in harm's way, other than leaving him with a man he loved who would never love him back, who would willingly send Radu into danger, never seeing that Radu would give up anything and everything for what Mehmed could never return. If Radu had been harmed, she would avenge him. She would kill Mehmed. Thinking about that made her feel slightly better. She spent nearly as much time dreaming of killing Mehmed as she did of doing other things to him. But she needed Radu. She still did not know what to do with the boyars. There were some already in Tergoviste. The ones who had supported her had come to pay their respects. But she suspected all the payments were forgeries, imitations of actual respect. She often rode in the poorer parts of the city. Always she had men with her. The ones she knew, the ones she trusted. Bogdan and Nikolai, Petru, Stefan, if he could be found, and others of her old Janicheris when needed. She told herself it was because the Valachian men who had joined her were not as well trained. But the truth was, she still felt more at home among Janicheris than Valachians. That preference filled her with gnawing guilt, but she reassured herself that it was because all her Janicheris had been Valachian first, just like her. On this trip into the city, they stopped at a well to get a drink. Larda had noticed that none of the wells in the city had cups or ladles. Many of them did not even have buckets for drawing up water. Her bag clinked metallically at her side. "Why is there no cup here?" Larda asked, projecting her voice. A tiny girl, whose curiosity won out over others' wariness, sidled closer. "No cups, Prince," she smiled shyly around the title, obviously delighted to address a girl that way. "People always take them." Larda frowned. "You cannot even keep a cup here for the good of the people." The little girl shook her head. Larda knew all this. She had counted on it. Turning to the men with her, she continued talking, loud enough for the people lingering on the edges to hear. "Interview everyone. Discover any thieves. People cannot prosper if they cannot so much as get a drink without fearing theft." "And when we find them?" Bogdan asked. Larda jerked her head toward the castle. "Then they can go in the courtyard and join the soldier who represents dishonesty and the impostor prince who represents theft." There had been a steady parade of citizens come to gawk at the impaled bodies. Larda knew word of the prince's fate, and the soldier's punishment had spread through all Tergoviste. It had been the right thing to do. She pushed the soldier's face from her mind. It mingled now with Machir's rotting, dirt-covered face, staring at her in accusation. She was doing the right thing. "That seems a bit harsh," Nikolai said, his voice soft. He moved closer so no one could hear him. These people are poor. They have nothing. Larda raised an eyebrow. They have me now, and they should know that things are changing. She reached into her bag, pulling out one of 10 silver cups. The treasury at the castle was as sparse and depressing as everything else in this city. But she had no need for fine things. Out here they served a purpose. They had attracted quite a crowd. People come to look at their new prince and whisper of her ascension and promises. Larda held the cup in the air. This is from my treasury. My wealth is your wealth. I give you a cup for your well. The people gasped, murmurs of curiosity and derision rippling through them. Larda smiled. This cup belongs to everyone. It is everyone's responsibility. I will not tolerate theft in my land, nor anyone who supports theft. The grumbling grew louder. Larda held up a hand to silence it. Theft cannot flourish in a country that cuts it out with swift and sharp vengeance. Thieves prosper among you because you allow it, which makes you complicit. I am tired of seeing Valahia weak. We are better than that. Together, we are stronger than anything. We are stronger than anyone. There was more nodding than grumbling now. Larda smiled bigger. This cup stays at this well. She handed it down to the little girl, who took it reverently. It is everyone's responsibility to ensure it remains safe to serve your community. Larda's smile turned sharp and cold as steel. I will come back to check on it. I expect it to be here the next time I want a drink. There was no denying the threat in her words or her eyes. She saw it settle on the people. Some met it with fear, some stood straighter, nodding, her own fierceness catching in their eyes. As they rode away, Nikolai leaned close once more. That was dramatic. Larda turned to him, exasperated. Say what you mean, Nikolai. You know that cup will be stolen.
No, it will not.
What will you do if it is?
Make an example.
Nikolai scowled, his scar puckering where it separated his eyebrows. You cannot fix a whole country in a few days, Larda. It will take time. Have you seen how long the average reign of a prince is?
We have no time.
I have to change things now. If you are so certain we have no time, why bother? Someone else will come and undo everything you have done.
Larda shook her head, tightening her grasp on the reins. She thought of Mahmed, all his careful planning. He had taken power and immediately made sure his empire was streamlined, efficient and safe. He knew everything had to be settled at home before he could look outward. Larda did not want to look outward. But she had to have safety and security here before she could hope to defend Valahia and her throne. If she could make the country stable for the common people, they would be hers. She did not understand the subtlety and machinations of the Boyars. She did understand swift, assured justice. Her people would, too. Everything has to change now so that I do have time. We cannot go on as we always have. And the only way I know to shift our course is through severely fulfilled promises. She closed her eyes, remembering all her lessons at the hands of her early Ottoman tutors. The head gardener, the prisons, the corpses hung for everyone to see their crimes and learn from their punishments. If that was how her country would move toward prosperity, then so be it. Mercy and patience were not options, not for her. The blood of a few would water the land for the bounty of many. Some lives are worth more than others, she thought.
How many lives until the balance tips out of our favor?
Radu whispered back.
They found the castle's stores of wine. Nikolai presented them to her with none of his usual good humor.
Should we sell it, he asked, or keep them for when the boyars come?
Larda stared at the barrels in front of her. It had taken them so long to get here, and now that they were, nothing felt the way it should.
She was tired of being in control all the time, tired of worrying, tired of waiting, tired of making hard decisions and wondering if they were the right ones.
No, she said. She smiled at her friend. We should get very, very drunk.
For the first time since they had arrived, Nikolai's smile was the same that had greeted her all those long years ago in a Yanacheri practice ring in Amasya, with Stefan, Petru, Bogdan, and a handful of Lada's other first Yanacheris. They dragged the barrels up to one of the towers. It was the same tower from which Lada, with Radu at her side, had watched Hunyadi ride into the city. That day had heralded the end of her life as she knew it. This one, she hoped, would herald the beginning of her life as she demanded it to be. Lada cleared her throat, holding a cup full of sour liquid.
I wanted to thank you. You rode with me. You stayed with me. And we won.
Nikolai cheered, raising his cup high, sloshing wine on Petru's arm. Petru laughed and licked it off, then hit Nikolai roughly, so that even more wine spilled. Stefan almost smiled at her, which made Lada embarrassed at his effusiveness. Bogdan gave her a heavy, meaningful stir. She raised her cup to cut it off, drinking deeply. She did not know if he knew how she really felt about him, but it was obvious what he felt was more, longer, deeper, truer. That made her feel powerful, and she would not give it up. The more they drank, the louder they got. Everyone traded stories, most about Lada and some outrageous thing she had done.
Do you remember when we were outside Sigishwara, the goat I found? Nikolai asked.
Yes, that thing was so mean and its milk was sour. But at least we had milk.
Nikolai tipped his head back, scar puckered and pulled tight as his cheeks shifted into a delighted smile.
I did not steal it like I told you I did. Well, not exactly like I told you, though I suppose I did end up stealing it.
Lada knew he wanted her to demand he tell the real story. Normally she would have avoided asking just to tease him, but she was too warm and happy to pretend.
What really happened?
Do you remember the old farmer we ran into earlier that day? The one with the long fingernails, Lada finished, finally remembering. It took a lot to stand out in her memory of that time, but that particular man had had fingernails nearly as long again as his fingers. Each nail was twisted, yellowed and cracked. He had offered to sell them food, but she could not stop looking at his nails and imagining what something they had touched would taste like. They had ridden on and camped nearby. Yes, I ran into him again as I was hunting. He had a goat with him that he had no need of.
So he gave it to you?
Petru asked. Nikolai shook his head, his smile growing even bigger.
He had no need of a goat, but he did have need of a wife.
No, Lada said, finally seeing where the story was going.
Yes, Nikolai doubled over with laughter. I sold you to him for a single goat. I told him I would take the goat back to camp and get you ready to be his bride.
Lada shuddered, imagining being touched by those hands.
If I had known, I would have stabbed you.
And that is why I never told you. I think of him sometimes, staring forlornly out of his shack, still holding out hope that someday his bride will come.
I cannot believe you sold me for a single goat, Bogdan huffed indignantly.
Lada is worth all the goats in the world.
She knew he meant it sweetly, but she really would rather not be valued in terms of goats.
Next story, she said, throwing her empty cup at Nikolai. He ducked just in time, and it shattered against the stone tower.
Nikolai refilled Bogdan's cup.
What was she like as a child?
Smaller, Bogdan replied.
Lada laughed until her stomach hurt.
Tell them about the time, Radu!
She stopped, cutting herself off, because saying his name, bringing him into this space, made her realize that she would trade any of these men, her friends, for Radu to be here with her. Nikolai filled in the space her silence created, recounting the abuse she had hurled at the Yanacheris in the woods to distract them from Hunyadi's forces. But soon they ran out of stories from the past year. When they had finally circled so far back in their history that the stories started taking place in the Ottoman Empire, everyone got quiet. They had left it behind, but they still brought it with them everywhere. What they had learned, what they had done, what they had lost. Larda knew that was why she kept these men closest. Not because they were better trained, but because they had been hardened in the same fire she had. Only they understood the strange space of hating what a country made them, while being grateful for it at the same time. Larda looked at the Radu-sized hole next to her. Then she looked up at the stars beginning to shine above them. "We are never going back to the Ottomans," she said.
"They will come for us," Bogdan said. "They always do."
Mahmed would not come. She had made it very clear what she would do if he did. But now, with a softening and dulling of the wine, she doubted her rash declaration. If he came to her, maybe she would not kill him. No one made her feel the way he did. He haunted her dreams. If he came to her, she would make him make her feel those things Bogdan could not manage. And then she would kill him, if she still wanted to.
"Let them come," she said. "I will drink their blood and dance on their corpses."
Petru raised his cup.
"I will drink to that."
Nikolai was staring at the horizon, frowning.
"Either I am far, far drunker than I thought I was, or something is wrong with the moon."
Larda was about to tell him to stop criticizing the poor moon when she realized he was right. The moon had been almost full the night before, but tonight it rose as a slender crescent, barely there. The rest of the moon was washed darkest red.
"You see that, right?" Nikolai asked.
"It looks like blood," Petru whispered.
They sat on the tower and watched the moon in silence. Larda wondered what it meant. That the night she chose to herald the beginning of her new life was bathed in the light of a moon stained with blood. 49. May 29th to June 12th. That evening, with the boys sleeping curled up around each other like puppies, Radu went to the edge of the roof and watched. He could tell from the activity in various neighborhoods that something was changing. Someone was coming. Mahmed. But Radu did not know the way he used to, when Mahmed had felt like a current running through his body, pulling him swiftly in the right direction. He knew now because he saw the effects of the man rippling outward. Soldiers coming through, clearing the streets, dragging bodies to the side. Finally, Radu could see him. Mahmed rode straight and proud through the city, his horse sidestepping occasionally around a remaining body. Perhaps Mahmed was not riding so straight-backed out of pride, but rather out of stiff revulsion. His triumphant entry into the city of his dreams was paved with bodies and decorated with death. Mahmed picked his way slowly toward the Hagia Sophia, and Radu wondered what to do. Go down and appeal to Mahmed's mercy. Wait and try to sneak the boys out of the city once things had calmed down. Find Cyprian and Nazira and live a fantasy life where they could all forget and forgive everything they had seen and done. Sick and exhausted, Radu decided to sleep instead. He walked past the trapdoor, only to find his sword placed to the side. Horror clawing through his chest, he raced to where he had left the boys. Manuel and John were still there sleeping. Amal was gone. Radu had not spoken with Amal, had not given him any instructions, but Radu had not been the one to send Amal into the city in the first place. Radu finally felt the tugging sensation of his connection to Mahmed return, and he walked slowly back to the edge of the roof. Mahmed had entered the square. The soldiers there lifted their swords, cheering and yelling, praising God and Mahmed, Then a boy darted between them, running directly to Mahmed's horse. Mahmed's guards drew close, but Mahmed waved them off. Amal pointed, and Mahmed looked up at Radu. Mahmed smiled, a look of relief and joy lighting his face. Once, Radu would have given anything to have Mahmed look at him that way. Now Radu had given everything, only to find he was still empty. He sat on the edge of the roof, dangling his legs over the side. Doubtless Amal would have told Mahmed about the heirs, too. Radu could not hide them from Mahmed. He had saved them for nothing. They would meet the same fate as Mahmed's infant half-brother, sacrificed for the security of the future. Radu should do what he should have done to Constantine. He should get up and swiftly kill them as they slept. Instead, he hung his head and wept. Small fires burning throughout the city gave it a cheery glow as sometime later the trap door opened. Radu did not turn around when Mahmed sat next to him, shoulder to shoulder. "I am glad you are here," Mahmed said. Radu smiled bitterly. "That makes one of us." "The flags in the palace. That was brilliant." Radu imagined himself before his time in Constantinople, how that person would have exulted in this moment, how he would have been filled to the brim with joy and pride to be recognized by Mahmed, to be truly seen, to be the more valuable Dracul. He could not answer. Mahmed put a hand on Radu's shoulder. It felt cold. "You turned the tide. You saw exactly what was needed, and you did it, as you always have, my dearest, my truest friend." Several men climbed onto the roof behind them, bringing lanterns that cast sharp shadows. "Where are the heirs?" Mahmed asked, standing and offering Radu a hand. Radu did not take it. "What will you do with them? Get them off this roof, to start with. It is no place for children." Radu looked up at Mahmed, raising an eyebrow. "And down there is..." Uncertainty turned Mahmed's expression angry. "Where are they, Radu?" Radu stood on his own, then crossed the roof to where the boys still slept. Mahmed gestured, and one of the men handed him a bag. He reached in and, to Radu's immediate relief, pulled out a loaf of bread and a leather canteen. Mahmed knelt in front of the boys, who were now sitting up, blinking against the lantern light. "Hello." Mahmed's voice was gentle as he held out the food. He spoke Greek. "You must be very hungry and thirsty after being up here all day. That was clever and good of you to stay out of the way. You are very smart boys." Manuel looked up, finding Radu, his eyebrows drawn tight in concern. John, too, searched Radu's face. Radu put everything he had left into giving the boys a smile of reassurance. He had no idea whether or not the smile was the most damning lie he had ever told. John reached out and took the bread, then handed it to Manuel. "Thank you," he said. Mahmed sat across from the boys, passing the canteen after taking a small drink himself. "John, is it? And Manuel?" The boys nodded, still wary. "I am so glad I have found you. I sent my friend Radu to keep you safe." Mahmed smiled up at Radu. Radu looked off into the night, unable to play along. "You see, our city is hurting. I need your help. I want to rebuild Constantinople, to make it into the city it was always meant to be, to honor its past and bring it into its glorious future. Will you help me do that?" John and Manuel looked at each other. Then John nodded. Manuel followed his example, his head bobbing with enthusiasm. Mahmed clapped his hands. "Oh, thank you. I am so glad to have you on my side." He stood holding out a hand to help them stand. Each boy took his hand in turn, smiling up at their new savior. Radu knew precisely how they felt. He knew how much they must worship Mahmed now for coming in the darkness and saving them from it. Radu had been them, many years before, he wished he could accept Mahmed's hand with the same warm relief again. Mahmed gave the boys into the care of his guards, promising he would see them again when they had gotten some rest, safe and sound, in a real bed. Radu went back to the edge of the roof. Already dawn was approaching. The hours here moved all wrong, some crawling by and lasting days, others slipping like water through his fingers. Mahmed joined him again.
"Will they really be safe?" Radu asked.
"Why would you ask me that?" Mahmed replied, his tone troubled. That was not an answer.
"Of course they will be safe. I will make them part of my household. They will be given the finest tutors and raised to be part of my empire. This is my city now, and they are part of my city. I never wanted to destroy Constantinople, or anything in it."
"We cannot always get what we want." Side by side, but further from Mahmed than he had ever been, Radu watched as the sun rose on the broken city. He shifted to look at Mahmed. Rather than pride, a slow expression of despair crept across Mahmed's beloved features. What he had sought for so long as the jewel of his empire was finally laid out before him in all its crumbling, dying glory. Even without the looting, the city was devastated, and had been for generations. Perhaps, looking out over it, Mahmed saw what the beginning of his legacy would eventually lead to. Whatever Mahmed did, whatever he built, the greatest city in the world was irrefutable evidence that all things died.
"I thought this would feel different," Mahmed said,
melancholy shaping his words like a song. He leaned against Radu, finally giving him the contact he had craved for so long.
"So did I,"
Radu whispered. After a single day of looting, rather than the traditional three, Mahmed declared an end. He kicked all the soldiers out of the city, banishing them to the camp to go over their spoils and leave what remained of the city unmolested. The camp itself swelled to accommodate the nearly 40,000 citizens taken captive to be ransomed or sold as slaves. Most of the churches had been protected by the guards Mahmed sent in, and all the fires that had been set were already extinguished. Mahmed himself had killed a soldier found tearing up the marble tiles of the Hagia Sophia. Then he had brought in his own holy men, and the jewel of the Orthodox religion was gently and respectfully converted into a mosque. Orhan had died fighting in his tower, as had all the men who attempted to hold out. One other tower had fought so long and so determinedly, though, that Mahmed visited and granted the soldiers their safe passage out of the city. Two communities within Constantinople survived without harm. One was a fortified city within the city that had negotiated its own terms of surrender. The other, the tiny Jewish sector. Mahmed met with the leaders there and asked them to write to their relatives in Spain and invite all the Jewish refugees to relocate and settle their own quarter of the city. He even offered to help them build new synagogues. Once the soldiers were back at the camp, word was sent throughout the city that anyone who had not been captured had full amnesty, whether driven out by hope or salvation, or simply exhaustion. Slowly, the survivors appeared. Mahmed vowed to build something better, and Radu knew that he would. He simply could not shake the cost of what it had taken to get there. In the days that followed, Radu wandered the streets in a daze, listening to Turkish in the place of Greek, and finding he missed the latter. Over and over he returned to Cyprian's house, but he could never bring himself to go inside. It would not be the same. He would never see Cyprian again, and Cyprian certainly would never want to see him again. Not now. Not after what he had done. In a city filled with the dead, where tens of thousands now suffered horrible fates outside its walls, Radu knew it was horrendous to mourn the loss of his relationship with Cyprian. And yet, he could not stop. Kumal found him sitting outside the Hagia Sophia. His old friend ran up to him, embracing him and crying for joy. Then he looked around.
"Where is my sister?"
Radu felt dead inside as he answered,
I do not know.
Kumal sat heavily next to Radu.
Is she? I sent her from the city on a boat with a trusted friend. But whether they got out and where they went if they did, I do not know.
He had inquired after the boat and received no concrete word of its fate. His only hope was that once news travelled that Constantinople was open to Christian refugees and Ottoman citizens alike, Nazira would return.
God will protect her.
Kumal took Radu's hand and squeezed it.
We have fulfilled the words of the prophet. Peace be upon him. Her work in helping us will not be forgotten, nor go unrewarded by God.
How can you say that?
How can you be so sure of the rightness of this? Did you not see what it cost? Were you not at the same battles I was?
Kumal's kind smile was sad.
I have faith because I must. At times like this, it is only through God that we can find comfort and meaning.
Radu shook his head.
I despair that my time here has cost me even that. I do not know how to live in a world where everyone is right and everyone is wrong. Constantine was a good man, and he was also a fool who threw away the lives of his people. I have loved Mehmed with everything I am since I was a child, and I have longed to enter this city triumphant with him. But now that we are here, I cannot look at him without hearing the cries of the dying, without seeing the blood on my hands. Nazira and I, we ate and dreamed and walked and bled with these people, and now they are gone, and my people are here. But I do not know who I am anymore.
Kumal said nothing, but he held Radu close as Radu cried.
Give yourself some time, Kumal whispered. All will come right in the end. All these experiences will lead you to new ways to serve God on earth.
Radu did not see how that was possible. He loved Kumal for trying to comfort and guide him, but he was no longer a lost little boy in a strange new city. Now he was a lost man in a broken old city, and no amount of prayers and kindness could undo what had been done. 2 weeks after the city fell, Mehmed asked Radu to meet him in the palace. He had set up a temporary residence there, already beginning construction on what would be his grand palace. A home to rival all others, a refuge from the world. Radu passed a woman in the hallway.
Radu?
He blinked, focusing on her.
Urbana, I thought you were dead.
Half her face was shiny with new scars, but she smiled.
No, and I got the forges at Constantinople after all. I won!
Radu tried to meet her happiness, but it was too large a task for him.
I am glad for you. You are welcome to help me any time you want.
She patted his arm, already distracted and doubtless planning her next cannon. Radu watched her walk away, glad she had survived. Then he saw two other familiar faces, Aron and Andre Dinesh.
Radu, Andre said. I know you now.
Radu did not bother bowing or showing respect. He was too tired for pretense.
Yes. It is good to see you, Aron said. Will you take a meal with us later? Do you mean that, or do you want something from me?
Aron's face and voice were soft.
Only the company of someone who speaks Valahian and understands some of what we have been through these last months. And I want to apologize for our youth together. We were cruel. There is no excuse for that. It does my heart good, though, to see the man you have grown into. I would like to get to know you.
Radu thought he would like to know himself, too. He felt like a stranger in his own skin. Sighing, he nodded.
Send word when you want me to come.
Andre nodded silently, and Aron clasped Radu's hand. Then there was no one between Radu and the room that held Mehmed.
Ah, Radu,
Mahmed stood when Radu entered, embracing him. Radu noted that they were alone. No stool-bearer, no guards.
"What can I do for you, my sultan?"
Mahmed drew back, frowning.
"Your sultan? Is that all I am to you?"
Radu passed a hand over his eyes.
"I do not know. Forgive me, Mahmed. I am tired, and I have been pretending for so long. I can no longer remember what I am supposed to be, and whom I am supposed to be it for."
Mahmed took Radu's hand and led him to sit in his own chair.
"Well, that is part of what we are doing today. I know who you are, and you need a new title to reflect it. How do you feel about Radu Pasha?"
Mahmed grinned. He was making it official that Radu was someone important in the empire. Before he could think better of it, Radu answered.
"I thought I was known as Radu the Handsome."
In the shadow that passed over Mahmed's face, and the way he immediately looked away, it was confirmed. Mahmed had known about the rumors. He had known, and he had said nothing to Radu.
"Is that why you sent me away? To kill the whispers about us?"
"No! I never sent you away. You were always close to me. Every day I looked at the city and trained my thoughts on you, wishing you well and worrying for you. I am so sorry that your time in the city was terrible. Soon it will be as a dream."
"It was not all terrible,"
Radu said. Something in the way Mahmed's expression shifted to deliberate casualness made his next question anything but innocent.
"The ambassador, you mean? He quite liked you. I could see it at a dinner."
Radu realized with a sickening lurch of his stomach that Mahmed was dancing around a question, trying to determine whether or not Radu cared for Cyprian in the same way, which meant that Mahmed knew Radu had the feelings for men that he was supposed to have for women. Which meant Mahmed could not possibly be unaware of the feelings Radu had nurtured for him all these years. Shame welled up in him, but a new feeling came too. Radu felt used. If Mahmed had known all this time, but had never acknowledged it, not even to gently tell Radu it was impossible. Nazira had said Mahmed would never fail to pursue an advantage, and having a friend so deeply in love with him that the friend would do anything in his service was certainly useful to any leader. But even now, as angry and hurt as he was, Radu could not look on Mahmed's face without love. He was still Mahmed, Radu's Mahmed, his oldest friend, and in spite of everything, Radu would not give him up. Radu had made his choice. He had chosen to save Mahmed at the expense of an entire city. Mahmed smiled, and it was the sun. Nazira was right. Mahmed was both more and less than a man. He was the greatest leader of generations. He was brilliant. He was a man other men would follow to their deaths. And because of that, just like Constantine, he was a man who would leave death in his wake as he built greatness around himself.
"I have a surprise for you,"
Mahmed said, his eyes dancing. Radu had one last dark spike of hope that finally, he could have what he wanted. They were reunited. The city was Mahmed's, and Radu had given it to him. They both knew how Radu felt. Maybe if Radu could have Mahmed, he could forget everything it took to get there, the same way Mahmed could forget what it took to get Constantinople, now that he had it. Radu leaned forward. Mahmed turned, clapping his hands together. A guard opened the door.
"Bring him in,"
Mahmed said, his tone an expression gleeful. Halil Vizier entered the room, the hems of his robes betraying the trembling of his knees. He bowed deeply.
"How can I serve you, my sultan?"
"Not merely sultan anymore. Caesar of Rome, emperor, the hand of God on earth."
Halil bowed deeper.
"All this and more is your right." Mahmed winked at Radu, then began pacing in circles around Halil, prowling like a cat.
You asked how you can serve me. I have an idea. I would like a member of your family from my harem.
Halil straightened, swallowing so hard Radu heard it. Even now Radu could see the wheels turning in the man's head. He nodded eagerly.
I have two daughters, both lovely and...
No, Mahmed said, holding up a hand.
Not that, harem. The other one.
Halil turned pale.
I do not understand.
Yes, you do. My other harem, the one you were so fond of telling people I had, the one that would ask for sons instead of daughters. I heard all about that harem. Didn't you too, Radu? Radu had so long nurtured a hatred of the detestable man, now visibly shaking in the middle of the room. He had devoted so much time to defeating him, had played a game in which Halil was the spider and Radu the valiant friend protecting Mahmed from the spider's web. But now, seeing Halil finally fall, Radu felt neither pleasure nor triumph.
Halil Vizier, Mahmed said,
not waiting for an answer from Radu.
You have worked against me from the beginning. I sentence you to death for your crimes. I will grant you this one kindness. You may choose whether your family dies before you, or whether they watch you die before dying themselves.
Halil hung his head, then lifted it, his eyes staring straight ahead.
Please kill them first, so they have less time to be afraid.
Mahmed nodded in approval.
A noble choice.
He gestured and the guards moved forward, taking Halil away. Mahmed watched until the door closed, and then he spun around, robes and cape, flaring.
One more enemy defeated. Your reputation is restored, Radu Pasha.
He beamed with pride, waiting for Radu to thank him.
No, Radu said. What do you mean?
Mahmed's eyebrows drew together. He looked at Radu as though looking upon a stranger. And perhaps he was. Radu was not the same person Mahmed had sent into the city.
Do not kill his family. They should not be held accountable for his guilt.
Radu knew Halil's second son, Salih, had used him, had taken advantage of Salih's attraction to him to get what he needed. He looked at the floor in deepest shame. He was no better than Mahmed in this matter.
But if I kill Halil, his family will be against me.
Send them away. Banish them. Strip them of their titles and forbid anyone in power to marry into that family.
But if you do this for me, spare them. If that is what pleases you, Mahmed said, waving his hand with a puzzled expression.
He spared their lives as easily as he had condemned them. Radu bowed to hide his expression of sorrow. Sorrow for Halil's family. Sorrow for Constantine and Constantinople. Sorrow for the person he had left behind when he crossed the wall for the first time. Sorrow for leaving Lada to pursue her own fate, while he stayed with someone who saw it as a gift to protect Radu's reputation against the truth of his actual affections. Mahmed put his hand on Radu's head, like a benediction. Then with one finger under Radu's chin, Mahmed lifted Radu's face to look searchingly in his eyes.
Do you still believe in me?
He asked. Suddenly the boy at the fountain again. His brown eyes were warm and alive, the cold distance of the Sultan gone.
I do, Radu answered. I always will.
It was the truth. He knew Mahmed would build something truly amazing. He knew that Constantinople needed to fall for Mahmed to hold on to his empire. He knew that Mahmed was the greatest sultan his people had ever known. But, like his love for Mahmed, it was no longer simple. Radu had seen what it took to be great, and he never again wanted to be part of something bigger than himself. 50. May 29th.
Let me handle any talk of the prince,
Toma Bazarab said. He eyed Larda critically. Larda had dressed for battle. Over her black tunic and trousers, she wore chainmail. It rippled down her body, the weight familiar and comforting. At her waist, she buckled the sword she had ripped free from the wall. On her wrists, she slid knives into her cuffs. The daughter of Valahia wants her knife back. She shuddered. She was not her father. She would not become him. Her only concession to finery was a blood-red hat in the style of the courts. In the center of it, she pinned a glittering star, with a single feather sticking up from it. Her comet. Her omen. Her symbol. Her country.
"Do you have a dress?"
Toma asked. She did not answer him, so he continued.
"They will demand reparations, and of course we will make them. Every Dinesh boyar will be at this meal. It may be overwhelming for you. I will handle everything."
"I do not need you to do that." He smiled and set his dry, warm hand on hers. Larda pulled her hand away.
"I have also had word from Matthias. He is very pleased with your success. The King of Hungary has taken ill, and Matthias has stepped in to make all decisions."
Larda felt a small stab of guilt. She had promised Ulrich that the boy would have a quick and painless death. Another promise broken.
"I am drafting our letter to the Sultan right now. We feel it is best to continue in the vassalage, appraising Matthias of any developments or troop movements."
"Continue in our vassalage? I have no intentions of paying anything to Mahmed, or anyone else."
"Oh, that will not work. We already owe money to the throne of Hungary and several Transylvanian governors. They will expect to collect soon."
"Do you have debts to them?" Larda raised an eyebrow. "You keep saying we, but I have no debts to those countries."
"I believe you burned a church and slaughtered sheep. If you want good relations with our neighbors, we must make amends, just like tonight is for making amends to the Dinesh families."
Toma opened the door.
"Come, they should be eating now. We cannot keep them waiting."
Toma insisted a show of wealth was as necessary as a show of strength, and so the food they served was finer than any Larda had swallowed since Adirna, finer than any her starving people ate. She resented every mouthful she imagined going into the boyars' privileged bellies. The smells of roasted meat and sour wine assailed her as she walked into the room. Somehow Toma had managed to enter before her. The massive table lined with Dinesh boyars stretched from one end of the room to the other. Larda had expected cold glares and hard looks as she threw her shoulders back and strode through the room behind Toma. Instead, she was met with a few curious, even amused glances. Most of the boyars did not stop eating or speaking to their neighbor. She had dressed for battle and was met with indifference. Would she have to fight the battle to be seen her whole life? The walk to the head of the table took an eternity. She wished she had not insisted she be alone for this. She wanted someone trusted by her side. Nikolai, with his incessant questions. Bogdan, with his dogged loyalty. Petru, or Stefan, or even Darciana. She realized with a pang whom it was she missed. She wanted Radu on her right, and she wanted Mahmed on her left. They had made her feel strong and smart and seen. They had made her feel like a dragon. Without their belief in her, who was she? She stood at the head of the table and waited and waited. Nothing changed. No one ceased conversation or bowed.
"Welcome," she said.
Her voice was lost among the general buzz of activity. She cleared her throat and shouted it, the meaning of the word probably lost with her angry tone. Finally, taking their time, the boyars' chatter quieted and then stopped. All eyes turned toward her, eyebrows lifted, corners of mouths turned up or down. Nowhere did she see the anticipated anger. Most of the boyars looked bored. She looked desperately to a side door where Nikolai stood smartly at attention. He mouthed,
"Thank you for coming."
"Thank you for coming,"
Larda blurted, then immediately regretted it. She cleared her throat again, standing straighter.
We have much to discuss.
I want compensation for the death of my cousin, a boyar near her said, his tone flat.
We will get to that, but...
Yes, of course, Toma said.
He sat next to the head of the table on her right.
I think we can work out payments and extra land as redress.
Larda froze, grasping for words. Why had he answered for her? Already they had put her on the defensive. This was not how it was supposed to go. How could they come in here, demanding compensation for the deaths of their relatives, while her own father and brother rotted because of their betrayal?
Thomas smiled encouragingly, as though nudging her. That is how you will answer for the deaths, right?
Larda closed her eyes, then opened them, smoothing her expression to match Thomas's tone. I will answer the same way they will answer for my brother, lying face down in a grave outside the city. Or my father, who has no grave.
Toma cleared his throat, giving her a minute shake of his head and a small, disappointed frown. This is all very bleak talk for the dinner table. We should speak of something else. How will you disperse your men? You mean to clear the roads?
She had not had a chance to finalize her plans for making the roads safe for travel and commerce. Why was Toma pushing her to talk about those ideas now?
I had thought we would divide it by area, and...
Toma held up a hand to cut her off.
No, you misunderstand. As prince, you are not allowed to have a standing military force. It is part of our treaties with Hungary and the Turks both. Matthias Corvinus specifically mentioned it in his most recent letter. He smiled patronizingly. I know this is all very new, and you were so young when you left us. Of course you did not know, but... Your men far outnumber a traditional guard. You may keep, he paused as though thinking, stroking his beard. Oh, 20? That should more than meet your needs. The rest we will divide among our estates. Since I already have a relationship with them, I volunteer to house the bulk of your forces.
Larda had more than 300 men now. Good men. Men who had given up everything to follow her.
They are my men. She snapped. I have made no promises to Hungary or to the Ottomans, but I have made promises to my men.
A dark-haired, rat-faced boyar near the middle of the table spoke up.
Promises you were never entitled to make, princes, he said with a sneer that made it clear what he thought of a woman holding the title. Cannot defend themselves. It is not done. A prince is a servant of the people. It is the duty of the boyars to hold soldiers to be called upon in times of need. If we decide the need is urgent, we will organize our men.
Toma nodded, reaching out to pat Larda's hand.
You have been gone too long. A prince is a vassal, a figurehead. Any attempt to build an army or even so much as a tower to defend yourself is seen as an act of aggression. You have nothing to fear now, though... The boyars are your support.
So your strength is my strength, Larda said, eyes half closing as she let the sea of faces in front of her blur. That is comforting. Some of the men and women laughed. Many went back to their conversations. None of this had gone as she thought it would. She had expected opposition, challenges, arguments. Instead, they all seemed perfectly willing to accept her as their prince. And then she realized why. They were happy to have her, because they were happy with weakness. The more pliable the prince, the more power they had. And who could be more pliable than a simple girl playing at the throne? No wonder Toma had supported her. He could not have designed a better avenue to power for himself than a female prince. If Larda died, the Dinesh line would put their own back on the throne. And until then they would do whatever they saw fit. If she had Radu, if she had a way to manipulate them, then maybe she could manage all this. But they worked with weapons she had no training in. Despair washed over her. Toma leaned forward conspiratorially.
You did very well. I will stay on as your advisor. No one expects you to understand everything.
All the change she saw sweeping the country in the shadow of her wings had been an illusion. These people ran everything. and nothing had changed for them.
"Which one will she marry?"
a woman a few seats down asked.